All right, welcome to Beyond the Show, Episode 3, Menace to Society Podcast. I just want to thank you for tuning in. This is our question and answer offshoot show. And we apologize for what went on with Apple. We're not really sure what happened, but they all of a sudden 10 episodes became available last night. And they one of them was the newer episode that people were having trouble finding. But hopefully they fixed that issue. So we if you're a Patreon subscriber, you're listening to this today on Friday. If not, you're we're going to drop it on Saturday for the rest of the public. But just want to thank you for listening, and like we've done the last two, we want to keep this real casual, no intros, Patreon, subscriber, sales, pitches, none of that. So just let's roll into it. Let's start with questions.
Sounds good. All right, our first question comes from Adam Ferguson. He says, hey, can you talk about what happened to Kareem Walker and that whole recruiting issue? He committed as soon as we won the Natty, and then it seemed like a roller coaster from then on. I know you said Urban changed the type of player he recruited when he came to Ohio State, but it's almost like you guys knew he was an issue because he flipped to bitch again and then did absolutely nothing while on the team and got kicked off. How did you guys know he was going to be a problem? Thank you for the show.
Yeah, so I failed to mention, we always start with our Patreon subscribers questions just because we feel like they support us, so we support them. But yeah, Kareem Walker, that was a different situation. It was a kid that was the number one running back talent-wise in the country for us. And then as time went on and he committed to us, and then I guess he was really had some attendance issues in high school, some academic issues, some things like that. And just a young kid making probably dumb decisions. I don't think he's a bad kid. I think he kind of started distancing himself from us, and then we did the same. I think it was pretty mutual. And then he picked Michigan and went up there and didn't have the career he had hoped for. But yeah, that was pretty mutual. I don't think anyone at Ohio State was upset that we lost him, and obviously hindsight's 2020. He didn't have the career he was projected to have, so I think it was a kind of a mutual split.
Okay, Nima wants to know what went into the preparations for the national championship game against Oregon. Did Urban's relationship with Chip Kelly and watching practice in 2011 give you guys any extra intel about Oregon's offense?
So actually, I don't know how much of it had to do with Chip Kelly as much as it had to do with our preparation for Oklahoma in 2008, because Oklahoma was a very up-tempo offense. They a lot of times kept the same formation on the field. It was Kevin Wilson's offense, so Ohio State fans know Kevin, and Indiana fans also. And it really was all about how you simulate the speed of that offense in practice, because that's the hard part, right? When you're facing these no-huddle offenses, it's how do you like simulate that tempo? Because for a scout team to do it is almost impossible, right? And so our whole theme, our whole mantra, it was definitely, I guess I would say, every practice, it was this mantra of 17 seconds, because they averaged one play every 17 seconds. And so we ran with that hard. I know the defense, they had two scout teams running at them simultaneously, one after the other, kind of rapid fire, just as fast as they were trying to run plays in 14 seconds to make the game seem slower than practice. And they did an excellent job. And that was the key in 2008 at Florida against Oklahoma. And that was the key in 14 against Oregon. And yeah, I would imagine Urban's relationship with Chip Kelly might have provided some insight, but I think it was more kind of what happened historically than Chip Kelly.
Sounds great. Well, we have one from Sean Wisenhunt. I assume it's Ken's brother. Hey, guys, just wanted to say great job and keep it up. I have a question about recruiting. What is the difference in red shirts, green shirts, and blue shirts? Also, what role does the university play in a kid going to a prep school after his senior year instead of going to college?
Yeah, so red shirts are always just if you don't play. That's all it is. People always say, are you going to red shirt? It's like you have no idea if he's going to red shirt. You red shirt after the freshman season. You might have an idea in season, but at the end of the day, if a kid's not good enough to play, he doesn't play. And if he doesn't play his first year or even his second year, if he hasn't used it, then you red shirt him post-year. I'm not sure what a green shirt is, but the blue shirt is when you are going to be oversigned in a class. And so you have a kid that's just dying to be a Florida Gator. And so you tell him, listen, we're going to be oversigned. We still want you, but you can't come in August or in July with the rest of the class because we don't have numbers. So if you don't want to be at Florida, then you're welcome to look elsewhere, but we still want you. So if you want to come, you'll come that next January, and then you can actually count that kid towards the next class. It's really just a numbers game and situation that KISS has to decide. Now, prep school is different. Now, a lot of times prep school can either be a kid ended up not qualifying and he needed just a little bit of a higher test score, or maybe just needed to retake one or two classes to get the GPA up a little bit. Or it could be another situation like that we're talking about, where it's just oversigned and you want the kid to play football and not lose a year of eligibility, as opposed to sitting out all fall. So you send him to a prep school that can kind of protect him and not let other schools recruit him. He plays football, still gets practice and work, and then he counts towards the next class also.
What if you get a blue shirt and you still don't have the numbers the next year?
I mean, I've never heard of that happen. I'm sure it's happened, but I've never heard of it happening. That'd be really screwed up.
Yeah.
But I don't know if schools actually do that. We never did. Yeah. I mean, you can't do that to a kid and his family.
Yeah.
Scott Sowers asks, I've always wondered how Zone 6 started. Is it just something you thought of one day, or were you talking to a former player recruit and it came out and then it stuck?
Yeah, so it actually happened on vacation. I was on vacation just kind of thinking about my career and my position group, and I really wanted to create a brand for the culture I wanted to create anywhere I coached, which was the culture that you ended up seeing with Michael Thomas and all the great players that we had through my career. And so I came up with it, and a couple players were talking about a rapper, Gucci Mane, and how he was from Zone 6 in Atlanta and all this other stuff. And then I was thinking about it on vacation, and just connected with, I think it was Dontre Wilson was the one that originally was talking about Zone 6 with Gucci Mane. And so it made sense. Zone, end zone, 6 points.
Yep.
And it became a theme, a mantra. And now I'm excited for that identity to grow.
Well, where are you vacationing?
I believe it was Marco Island, Florida. The Marco Island Marriott Resort.
Nice.
It is a big-time hotel.
He was in Zone 6 Atlanta.
Yeah, I was not there. I heard that's like the murder capital of Atlanta. I was not visiting there.
Ryan Valentine likes to know, I'd love to hear about how Coach Hinton was pushed out for incompetent Ed to coach tight ends. Seems as if Coach Hinton's unit was performing and the guys, Nick and Jeff, not too happy.
Yeah, Tim Hinton's one of my favorite persons I've ever been around, and he's an excellent football coach. That happens a lot. It actually happened with Dan Mullen and Stan Drayton at Florida also. You get a coordinator that just doesn't like one of his assistants and wants to, put blame on that assistant and try to claim they aren't a great coach or whatever. And Urban had too much respect for Tim Hinton to fire him, because, and I think Urban knew he was a good coach, but it was just a alignment mess, a cultural mess on the offensive side of the ball. And unfortunately, Tim Hinton, who's a great football coach, got the brunt of it. And it's sad, because he's one of the finest coaches I've been around and one of my favorite people I've ever met. But yeah, it happened similar to Stan Drayton at Florida. He left for Tennessee because of it, because Dan Mullen was pushing him out and blaming him for a lot of things to Urban. And then when Dan left, Steve Adazio was like, listen, Stan Drayton is one of the best running back coaches I've been around. I want to bring him back. And so Urban brought him back. So it's sad when a coordinator does that to a coach, but unless it's warranted. But that's the moral of the story.
Josh wants to know, do you see Urban eventually becoming Ohio State's full-time AD? And if so, do you think he could eventually plug himself back into our head coach position if things with Day don't work out?
Yeah, I highly, highly doubt that. I don't think Urban wants to be a full-time AD. There's too much work involved, and I think if he was going to put that kind of work in, he'd rather be a head football coach, to be honest with you.
So he's not going to be Barry Alvarez?
No, I don't think so. Unless there's a way he could have an assistant AD that does all the work and he could be the figurehead AD, maybe then. But I don't think he has any interest in that. I think he likes where he's at right now. Unless he was to get the itch to work that much, then he would get back into coaching.
Okay, so Mitch DePiro, what is the difference between high schools in Texas, California, Florida, Georgia, as opposed to a school in New York or other states where high school football is not a breeding ground for top recruits? What distinguishes those territories? Coaching, culture, weather?
This could be 7 episodes in a row. The
benefit that schools like Texas, California, Florida, Georgia, that they have over other schools is they have weather, mm-hmm. so they can do things year round outside, and they can all, they also, most or all those have spring ball. So they have a good 3-4 week session of football camp. And so those kids automatically have they're more prepared. I mean, you think about it, 4 years of high school, that's 4 extra football camps, right? And I think that's the main thing they have over anywhere else. But I don't want that to take away from anything now. Some great players have come out of New York, Ohio, Maryland, places that don't have spring football. And it just comes down to great coaches. Like New York City, for instance, does not have great football, you would think. They have good basketball. They don't have great football. But there's a guy, Danny Lamberg, there that's a head coach at Erasmus that puts out D1 recruits every year because he's a great football coach. He coaches them hard. He does a great job. He's a phenomenal coach. Probably should be a college coach. And not that that is some delineation that makes you better than a high school coach. But there's guys like that in any state. In Ohio, there's 100 of them. Where those guys are just excellent coaches and they're developing kids and they're working within the rules the state puts in place. But so do the rules that Ohio have hurt Ohio players? Absolutely. But coaches find a way to still develop elite players for sure.
Dresden wants to know, can we get a full Nebraska breakdown of the roster, schedule, etc., since they're the favorite in the West? Also, if Nebraska and Ohio State are 4-0 going into their game, will you be going to Lincoln for the game? Might put Memorial Stadium in your top 10 stadiums.
I really want Memorial Stadium to be in my top 10 stadiums.
We should go.
Yeah, so that we're really identifying what games we want to think about going to and to kind of provide feedback on the atmosphere also. We're definitely going to dive into Nebraska prior to that game, especially if both teams are 4-0. And it'll be in-depth, and probably it's going to be on our offshoot Big Ten show so that SEC fans don't have to listen to Nebraska-Ohio State analysis for a year. But yeah, I definitely think that if we can find a way to get there and find a way to organize it all, we definitely want to get down to Memorial Stadium because that's going to be, I think, one of the best, you know, first quarter games of the college football season for sure, especially if both teams handle business like they should. It's going to be a hell of a matchup. Adrian Martinez, Justin Fields, Scott Frost, Ryan Day. It's going to be awesome. So yeah, that's definitely the plan, and we got to figure out how to get it done, but we appreciate the question.
I'll pull out my Nebraska gear.
Oh Lord. Throwback.
Right. Stephen Crowley asks, just wondering if you could touch on Charlie Strong as a head coach and what went wrong with his time in Texas. Is he really that great of a person? All bias aside, is Tom Herman a good coach?
Yeah, I mean, I've said it maybe 1,000 times, and I know people are like critical, like I'm bitter at Tom Herman. Tom Herman's one of the best coaches I've been around. I've never, ever critiqued or downplayed his ability as a football coach, recruiter. He's really, really, really good, and he belongs in that conversation of top coaches. I've simply called out his loyalty to what used to be a friend and his character as a person, because he plays this woe is me high and mighty. But yeah, he's an excellent football coach. Now Charlie Strong is another great football coach. He's down at South Florida now, and I think what went wrong at Texas was they hired a guy that wasn't a Texas guy, and that is a hard job to get if you're not a Texas guy, because Texas high school football is huge. And it's a very loyal state. It's a very political state. And it's, I don't know if Charlie connected with the high school coaches like he should have. He recruited his background, South Florida, Florida. He did recruit Texas, but the emphasis wasn't placed on Texas, and that started killing him. And so I think he shot himself in the foot from the get-go. He should have focused on Texas, tried to really build a wall around Texas, ride the momentum of a hot coach coming into Texas. And I don't think he did that. I think he was not, you know, super well received. And then he needed to sign some great players, so he started recruiting Florida, and that really pissed people in Texas off.
Yeah. I am really impressed by these questions, by the way. Mm-hmm. They're really good.
They are. Tim O'Neill wants to know, what happened to Jamel Dean? Real injury or another story?
Yeah, Jamel Dean, that was, I'll tell you what, there you go, that's a Tim Hinton recruit right there. It's an unfortunate situation, and I've seen it a couple times in my career. So the doctors at Ohio State DQ'd him, which means they ruled that he can't play football anymore because he didn't have cartilage in really both of his knees, which was awkward because he ran fine, played fine, moved fine, but they said his knees were going to become arthritic, and I don't really know why that would matter. It's the kid's decision. If he can move and play and he's not hurt, it just doesn't have, he, I guess he had had some knee injuries or whatever and had, didn't have cartilage, but they, so they just DQ'd him, said he couldn't play. So he got a release and was allowed to play right away at Auburn and had a great career and went on. I mean, it was just the dumbest thing alive. But I saw it before in my career with a kid named John Yabuti, which was a defensive end at Marshall, whose brother Ashton played at Ohio State. Yep. And out of, I mean, he was a great player at Marshall. And then one offseason, he had like a stinger. And the doctors did a MRI and x-ray and all that. And they said, oh, his neck column is too narrow. He can't play football anymore. He might get paralyzed. Jeez. So his brother was $25 million cornerback for the Bills. So his brother flew him to like the top three neck specialists in the world. And those neck specialists said, no, he can play. I mean, it's narrow, but he can play. He's not going to get paralyzed. And the doctors at Marshall were like, no, he can't. Oh. No, he can't. We said he can't. He can't play here. He can play somewhere else. And so then, sure enough, we actually, our D-line coach, myself, we all went to Temple, got a job. So he transferred there and was a great player there and played and went to the NFL. So I think what's sad is sometimes doctors get their, they kind of, bow up a little bit, their reputation's on the line, and they're like, ain't no doctor better than me, buddy. He can't play it because I said so. And you're like, well, how about we reevaluate this now? We really like the kid. If a kid can play, other doctors say he can play. Let's calm down for a minute. It's like, nope, can't play here. Gotta go.
What's that accent? Is that, what's his name? Bob Greenlee?
Jim Greenlee?
Jim Greenlee.
from Greer, South Carolina.
There you go.
All right, our next question comes from Ben Watwa. Full disclosure, I wanted to hate you and your podcast.
Thanks, Ben.
To my surprise,
you... Hey, you know what, Ben? I wanted to hate you too, but glad we got over that.
To my surprise, you and your podcast is something I look forward to now. So, my question. The Pouncey Brothers have always come off like they are about that life. What's the true story from your view, and are they really as they come off? Thanks.
I don't know what that life is, but they are probably about it.
I think he might be talking about their Free Hernandez shirts and stuff like that that kind of push people the wrong way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was one of their best friends, and I'm sure they don't condone what he did, but I mean, that is what it is. It's two guys that was their best friend that probably sat about it. But anyways, I actually talked about this on the Big Three Roll-Up, and if you guys haven't checked it out, it's a Florida podcast about the Big Three schools. And they asked me the question was, who are the baddest boy dogs in that locker room? And I put the Pouncey twins at 1A, 1B because they are about that life. One, they go harder than anyone on the team all the time. Two, there was two of them, so it was 2-on-1 automatically, no matter what. If you got a fight with one, you better have your right hand swinging to the right and your left to the left because you're 2-on-1. But no, they were dogs. I mean, they were the epitome of some grown-ass men that they showed up, and it was – high energy, chirping, going hard, going after people, even people in their own unit. Like, they were the reason the O-line like developed so rapidly, because if you missed a block, boy, they were on your neck going at you like, dog, you're trash, bro. Get out of here. You can't play with us. Like, you're trash. Get your trash ass back on the second line. Like, and it got to the point where players are like, man, I'm not screwing up and dealing with the Pouncies. Yeah. Hell no. And so they were probably, I mean, some of the best.
Well, that works.
Some of my favorite players I was around ever, and they didn't take shit from nobody.
Well, when you're as elite as they are, you know, you can do that, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're going to get into some recruiting questions now. Byron wants to know, I think a good idea for the show is just telling some funny stories about going into some high schools around the country. I get coaches in our school and random students, teachers or whatever, want to run up and talk. I'm sure you have some good ones while on the road.
Oh man, yeah. I've seen some wild things recruiting. I think my wildest one that I tell all the time. So I've recruited all over the country, obviously. But I've spent a lot of time in South Florida, a lot of time in D.C., Baltimore, Virginia Beach, that area. And I was in D.C. and I went to a high school. Coach met me at the front of the room. We start walking back to his office, and we walk by, and I'm talking to him, and I look over. And there's this kid and this boy and this girl going at it. And the boy has his hand up this girl's skirt, like, and they're going after each other, like getting it on. And I'm like jaw drop, eyes wide, like, what is, I'm looking at the coach like, bro, are you going to say anything? And he was like, I finally was like, coach, what was up with that? Like, as we walked by, and he was like, oh shit, coach, that's nothing. Welcome to Southeast DC.
Jesus.
I was like, oh, wow. So we just let that go on, I guess, huh? Okay, let's go to your office,
I guess. Finger blasting in the hallway.
I guess. I don't know. I was like, whoa. I never saw that before. That was a one-time occurrence. And I've got a lot of those. But yeah, that's a good topic. We might have to think about incorporating that in every show.
Yeah. That could be a segment. Some coaching questions. John Spark wants to know something I've always wondered about. A lot of guys on the sidelines have headsets. What is the communication protocol? Who talks? When do they talk? Seems like there would have been a system so people aren't talking over each other.
Yeah, I mean, the system is it's the coordinator's headset. So obviously offense, defense are on totally separate channels. You don't interact with each other at all. Up in the box they can because they're in the same room, but it's not like I could ever flip over and say, hey, Kerry Combs, your guy's playing press. Or, you know, you don't talk to the other side of the ball. So the offensive side of the ball is managed by the manager, right, the coordinator. And I think so it's his voice only, other than communication, conversation, and a quick interjection. So that was the key. It was like, if you're going to talk, make it a quick statement so that he can keep it moving. And so it would be like, I remember, for instance, the trick play against Alabama. It was like, we're rolling, Tom's going tempo. And I was like, hey, what about the reverse pass? And then you shut up, get out of there. He might say, No, screw you, and keep going. And that's fine. I'm just trying to help him not forget about something. You know what I mean? That I think is a good call right here. And then Urban was the greatest violator of it because he would like be going off talking. Why did he do that? And then he would even be like, I need to shut up. I'm screwing you up. But if something like that Alabama play happened, all of a sudden you recommend it and they're like, and then Urban would be like, oh shit, hold on. Let's call timeout and think about this. And they call timeout and then you discuss it. So in those dead times, in between series, timeouts, there's conversation going on. There's also a way to split the channel where the O-line coach and the tight end coach can talk to each other and the quarterback coach and receiver coach can talk to each other. And or you can – there's a number of ways to set it up. But, yeah, there's definitely a very intricate system. And violators of it, beware.
I thought it was mostly just heavy breathing.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of heavy breathing and a lot of the old headset guys talking.
All right, Rick Swick asks, out of all the bowl games you were involved in, which one had the best atmosphere and treated the coaches and team the best, you know, had the best swag, etc.?
Yeah, I think I'll tell you what. So the best of the original BCS bowls was the Fiesta Bowl, and it was bar none, to the point where they actually made rules against the bowl games because the Fiesta Bowl for a coach was unreal. And I wasn't a full-time coach at Florida, but it was every day you'd walk into your room and they'd give you a gift. And I'm not talking about a gift. I'm talking about like a $3,000 Movado watch or a Tiffany's crystal football, or I mean, I'm talking about big-time gifts. And the BCS got involved and they're like, all right, calm it down. You're making everyone else look bad. And but still, the Fiesta Bowl was far and away the best. Now, I never went to the Rose Bowl, and that's one of my greatest regrets. I didn't get to see that, so don't hold it against me, Rose Bowl committee. But and now the Sugar Bowl is cool because it's in New Orleans, and what a crazy city that is.
Are you still getting cookies from that one bowl?
Oh, I was just going to say, outside of that, those bowls, the Cotton Bowl was unbelievable.
That's one, yeah.
The Cotton Bowl, and they sent us Cheryl's Cookies, a year subscription. Every month, you got like two dozen cookies. But not only that, but the bowl game was awesome. The Cotton Bowl people were awesome. Dallas is awesome. Like everything about the Cotton Bowl is awesome. So those would be my top two, Fiesta Bowl, Cotton Bowl for sure.
Jerry's World is a really cool place.
Yeah, Jerry's World's crazy.
All right, let's get into some life questions now. James Ridge wants to know, a while back you mentioned that Urban had a never give up on a kid policy. I was curious about the real story behind Avery Atkins' case, and if that example maybe caused Urban to take the never give up approach.
Yeah, so that's exactly what caused it. And not that he ever gave up on Avery, he didn't. That's a tragic, tragic story because he was a kid that came in as a freshman and played right away. I mean, you could tell he was going to be an all SEC type player, NFL player, and the most beautiful kid, like smiling, seemed like the greatest kid in the world. I think he just had a lot of stuff going on at home with maybe his family. Maybe I know he had a girlfriend at the time, and a lot of things were going on. And I think he kind of got consumed by it and got involved in some things he shouldn't have. And ended up getting in trouble at school because of it, and then went back to, I believe he was from Daytona, that area. And then I know Chuck Heater went over and brought him back to campus, and he was back on campus trying to just get himself back to where he could play again, and then had another slip up. And then next thing you know, the kid, I think it was on purpose, overdosed, like a suicide. And it changed who Urban Meyer was forever. And again, they didn't give up on Avery. It's not like they gave up on him and kicked him to the curb. They were trying to work with him, trying to get him back. But I think it provided just that gut-wrenching, pulling on the heartstrings, like just tragic, devastating story about a beautiful kid that really changed how Urban never wanted to give up on a kid. Now, he would discipline the hell out of him. He would kick him out of school, or kick him off the team, and force him to go to rehab and force him to go to inpatient. He would be very, very rigid and disciplined at making that happen, but he never wanted to give up on a kid. And then, and I mean, you could fault him for it if you want to. I won't. I don't know why you would, because there's several stories that you could tell of kids that ended up pulling out of it and making it. And how do you say that, oh, because he let some kids at Florida still remain on the team while they were trying to work with them to get their life on track. Okay, so that is why he's a bad person. But the other 30 players that he did the same with that ended up turning it around and now live great lives, maybe made it in football or even made it in life, like have families. Oh, but never mind those. Throw those away. It's just the bad ones we want to talk about. But that's, I mean, that's society. That's what we do.
True.
Okay, our last question comes from Brian. What was your relationship like with Hartline? What do you have to say about the recruiting he has done in just a short time of being a coach? And also, do you still associate with any coaches on the staff?
Oh, man. I won't do that to them. yeah, I associate with a number of coaches on the staff still. They were good friends. And, right. And the good thing is you find out the real ones because they remain good friends. I'm certainly not going to tell you who it is because God knows they'll get like – asked about it in the media, so
they'll probably get a 3-game suspension.
Yeah, they might get a 3-game suspension too. Yeah, I still have many friends on that staff, on several staffs. I still talk to the real ones. The ones that were fake friends, I don't talk to. Which that's the cool thing about adversity; it shows you those colors. But and as far as Hartline, we had a great relationship. Still have a good relationship. I don't talk to him as much, so don't blow him up about talking to me. But we had a great relationship, great working relationship. We had friends of some sort. I think I've talked about it 100 times. I think what he's doing in recruiting is unheard of. I mean, he's number one in the country as far as he's the top recruiter in the country. I mean, it's something that I don't know that anyone at Ohio State's ever done, that not when I was there, including myself. I can't stand how people have to tear me down to build him up because it's unnecessary. Right. He's that good. Like, the problem with that is when you do that, when you tear someone else down to build someone else up, you're actually taking away the credibility of building that person up. It's like, no, if he's that good, which he is, I worked with him. None of you did. None of you people writing articles about Brian Hartline and how he made up for me. None of you have ever worked with him. You have no idea if he's any good. I do. And he is that good. And the fact that you're taking away from Brian Hartline and how elite he is as a coach by bringing me up at all, because it's irrelevant. He took over an awesome group, a great group, a group I worked very closely with for, I don't know, 5-6 years. And he took him, he continued that development, maybe even enhanced it, did it a little better than me. I don't care. But regardless, he's a great coach, an excellent recruiter, obviously, which no one could know until you do it. So my relationship was great, is great, and has never not been great. And I think he's doing an absolutely ridiculously phenomenal job, and Ohio State better buckle up because they're going to have to pay that man.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And he'll be along the lines of Mike Vrabel. He'll be a coordinator in no time, or he might just skip that whole step and get a head job somewhere. It could be in college. He might jump to the NFL. Who knows? He's
well, yeah.
He's that smart though. He is very, very intelligent. So yeah, he's excellent.
I noticed the question asker's name was Brian, and he didn't leave a
last name.
I think he might be a little too busy to send in a question.
No, it was him. It was him.
Must have been.
Okay, Patrick Murray wants to know, how common is it for former players to come back and work out with coaches, strength trainers, and current OSU players?
Oh, that's a great question, and it's a great question because it's depends on the place. I know, and this, you're going to talk about Dan Mullins. One thing he's done a great job of is getting those great players that we had at Florida back to Gainesville, because that never happened. Kids would leave Gainesville, and it's like Gainesville is a small college town, hard to get to. Like, why would I ever go back there, right? And so it depends on the place. Like, Columbus is very different than Tuscaloosa. And I'm sure a lot of players go back to Tuscaloosa just because of the love they're shown, the program, the strength coach, and everything. But Columbus is different because a lot of those – and this is something that I used to tell recruits to look at is, look at where these kids that come from all over the country come to Ohio State, go play in the NFL, and then when they're done playing, what do?
They just come back to Columbus.
Or do they move back to Florida, or do they move back to Columbus? And a lot of these kids – will or kids, I guess they're men at that point. They buy homes in Columbus. They raise their families in Columbus. So you'll see all the time at Ohio State. I mean, Bobby Carpenter was in the weight room almost every day. Joey Galloway was around all the time. I mean, just a litany of great players that come back to Columbus, maybe reside in Columbus, or even like just come back to see like Michael Thomas, Braxton Miller, all those guys show up at some point. I saw on Snapchat, I think, the other day from KJ Hill that Joe Burrow was back in town. And Joe Burrow plays at LSU now. But you know what I mean? The players, they love Columbus. They love the atmosphere, the culture, the fans, and the city. And so I would imagine there's a bunch of other places like that. But again, it's about the program. And one of the biggest problems that former players have is, let's say you played 15 years ago, and now you don't know a person in the building. And so it's really on the head coach to direct his support staff and administrative staff to reach out to those guys and let them know they're welcome and please come back. We want to see you. And Urban did that at Florida, and you saw all kinds of great players come back from the likes of like Chris Collinsworth, like way back in the day, all the way up through Danny Warfels, and all those great players would come back from time to time.
Steve Spurrier.
He came back, but he was wearing South Carolina colors. But yeah, so it depends on the place. It's not uncommon, but some programs, I think it happens more often than others. And sometimes it just depends on the atmosphere you live in.
Like, I feel like Ohio State, all those guys that are in the NFL currently, they're on their bye week, they're always at the Shoe.
Yeah, for sure.
It seems like it.
For sure. And you saw, and a cool thing is about, and again, not to just go on and on about Ohio State, but it's what I saw the most of. I can compare Ohio State and Florida, though, spent multiple years at both stops. And Ohio State, it was guys that were not just Urban guys, like Ted Ginn would come back, Santonio Holmes would come back. All these guys that were Tressel guys or Cooper guys, they would come back. And it's so, yeah, I think it happens a lot, and especially guys still playing. A lot of times they'll want to go back to their school at least for a couple weeks and train there, hang out there, you know, get to see the players they still know, maybe some of the newer players they don't know. So, yeah, I think it's common, but I think it's just depends on the place. All right, I think that's good for today. Wrap it up with those questions. We appreciate them. Again, send questions in through all platforms. We still have a number of questions to get to. So if you haven't heard your question yet, we're going to try to get to all of them. I doubt it's going to happen, but we'll try our best. And the one way to make sure we get to your question is send it. If you are a Patreon subscriber, send it through Patreon. We will always get to those first because, again, like I told you before the show, if you support us, we want to answer your questions and deliver you the content that you want. So thanks for joining us, and make sure you check out episode 17 on Monday. So for Patreon members, Tuesday for the rest of the public. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.